Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, talking holiday plants and other houseplants today with one of our favorite gardeners, Tova Martin. She is a perennial, an heirloom, a vegetable and cottage gardener. She's accredited as an organic land care professional. Tova's areas of specialty also include, well, she's got decades of experience with tropical plants, the author of many gardening books, a horticulture industry veteran, speaker, and trainer. Her latest two books are The Indestructible Houseplant and The Unexpected Houseplant. You may have some questions for her, and I hope you'll join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@wpr.org. And you can also post to The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. Tova Martin, welcome back.
Hey, Larry.
It's always good to hear your voice.
Well, this is my little gift. This little Christmas talk here. I just thought of a new title for myself.
You did? What?
I think I'm going to be the holiday plant coach.
I like that. Well,
yeah.
The holiday, I'm going to write that down, holiday plant coach. All right.
Yeah,
well,
I tell
you what, lots of plants are going to be purchased and given this holiday season. What, you know, I can think of some, but what are, in your mind, what are the most popular?
You know, there's a little group of plants that sort of make the holidays beautiful, and they're plants that perform right now, aren't they? Like like Flaming Katie. Do you know what I mean? The Kalanchoe that's just doing its thing right now.
Yeah.
And there's, oh gosh, Christmas Cactus.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes a little off schedule, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people get rosemary topiaries, don't they?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Those are all nice ideas. What's your favorite to give as a gift?
I love the Flaming Katie because
yeah.
It's so easy. It you know, and it blooms and blooms and blooms. You can hardly, you know, if you wanted to kill it, you could.
Well, so that's for those with who may not have a green thumb. That's a good one.
Yes, that's and the flowers. You know, I don't know if you've been to the garden centers recently, or even into supermarkets. The color range goes from white to pink to orange, and you know, everything but blue, basically. Beautiful, beautiful colors. There's doubles now and singles. Very, very pretty.
Here in Wisconsin, I think poinsettias are probably the most popular plant this time of the year. And, you know, how long can we expect those red leaves to last?
Well, those are actually, you got it right. Those are actually bracts. And they are they last quite a while. The problem is that the plant itself can get white fly and that sort of thing a little later on. So I suggest that you have a little ritual, which I call the divesting of the poinsettia around mid-January.
I think that's a good idea. Just getting them to try to get them to bloom again.
It's not worth it. But you know, they are absolutely beautiful, and it seems like all those scientists spend all that time every year making them more and more exciting.
You know, another plant that you see pretty often these days is the Norfolk Island pine.
That's so easy.
Yeah,
and it's like having your own living Christmas tree inside. It looks a lot just like sort of like a spruce without the prickles, and
yeah.
I have three together in a small little pot. It really looks like a grove in the woods.
Yeah.
It's very much like being outside. They're so easy, and then you can, you know, unlike Christmas trees, you can just keep them.
How do they survive in, let's say, these colder, drier conditions here in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. You know, I actually have had this threesome in a pot for at least 3, maybe 4 years now. And they are the smallest, crampedest shoes you've ever seen in your life. And they're just perking right along. They're looking, you know, they're right off in a north window, but they get fairly good light from other windows. They are so easy and so rewarding.
How big, now you've had yours about 3 years, how big do they get?
Well, of course, they can become little trees in their native habitat, but as I said, mine are cramped. I'm not pushing it. I don't need a tree in my house. I mean, a huge tree. So mine are about a yard tall.
Okay.
They're beautiful. They're beautiful green. You know, that's another plant. You would have to really work on killing this plant. You would have to have, you know, the death wish on this plant or something.
Well, Alex in Madison has a question for you about, about a problem he's got. Let's go there. Alex, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Tova. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have, well, I guess bordering on many houseplants now, and it's sort of a collection of different orchids and succulents and ferns. We've got, like, bird's nest and a staghorn fern and a couple other things, and have some of them outside in the summer and fall, and just looking at one of my orchids that is just getting ready to bloom again this year, I saw what I thought were little, like, blisters or something along the spike, and then touched one, and it squished, and I realized after looking a little bit on the internet that I actually had scale.
Yeah.
Never had an issue with it before, and I was just looking for some advice other than just sort of gently wiping them away. If you had any suggestions for that, and then also controlling it to make sure it doesn't spread. I've only found it on one plant, and I'm not sure, like, how much to separate it from the rest of them, or if it's really an issue for, like, the ferns and succulents, or I only need to be looking at certain things.
It can be an issue more for ferns than succulents, I've found. Scale does like fern fronds a lot, especially the Boston fern types. But my suggestion would be to segregate it, you know, just get it apart from everything. You know, we used to do little alcohol, you know, just touch it with a little bit of alcohol swab type thing, but one thing we used to use was cedar oil for it, like a horticultural oil.
Yeah.
And I don't know if neem is check and see if neem oil is it's recommended for that, but that's another possibility. Mm-hmm. That said, also check on the label, because certain plants, like ferns, do not like horticultural oils. It sort of covers their little breathing stomata on the leaf, on the fronds. So you want to watch out for using that. I'm not sure about orchids, to tell you the truth, whether they are sensitive to horticultural oils or not. I've never needed to use them. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
on an orchid. But definitely, definitely keep an eye out. That's an easy insect to monitor for.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And so when you say segregate, does that, like, just a few feet away or a separate room? Or
If you can put it in its own room, that's the safest.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
Good luck, Alex. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234 with your houseplant questions. Give a call. Kiana in Madison up next. Hi, Kiana.
Hi. I have another insect question, and it might be more suitable for an entomologist, but I have noticed this year with my houseplants, which I keep outside all summer, bring them in the fall, that I have a small fly. It's kind of similar to a fruit fly. Its wings extend beyond the back end of its body. And I'm curious to know if, there's probably so many flies that can affect houseplants, but if it's feeding on organic matter in the soil, and I don't need to worry about it, or if it's feeding on the juices within the leaves and the stems, and if I need to be more concerned about that.
You can actually see this fly with your naked eye. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I can. When it's flying, when it's kind of flying around the plants, I can see it, and then it will occasionally land on my iPad. They're drawn to the light of an iPad or a computer screen, so I do see it then.
Okay, so it's about the size of a pinhead, or
pinhead? Yeah, a little bit bigger than a pinhead, I would say.
Pencil
okay.
point, a period, and a pencil.
Curious pencil. I suppose it depends on how dull the pencil is. Probably maybe an eighth of an inch.
An eighth of an inch.
Maybe not even that big.
I mean, it doesn't really sound like a fungus gnat. Are there a lot of these little buddies here?
A lot. I can see several of them
okay.
swarming around a plant. I wouldn't say I have dozens of them.
What do you think, Larry? It doesn't really sound like a fungus gnat to me.
I'm not sure. I think what I would do, though, is if there's any chance to get a close-up picture, photo of it, you could send it to our insect diagnostic lab. You could,
sure.
or you
okay.
could just mail some of them to the insect diagnostic lab. And PJ
sure.
Leash, who is, could take a look at it. He could probably tell you pretty quickly. If you can get a photo, you could probably get a pretty quick answer from him as to what the insect is, and he would know in terms of its properties.
What color is it?
Black.
Oh, it's black. Okay, it's
and
black.
And its wings are clear.
So it's definitely not a white fly.
No, it's not a white
okay.
fly.
Okay.
I think you need to get a hold of PJ Leash at the
okay.
UW Insect Diagnostic Lab. That's a hard one without seeing.
Sure.
Yeah.
I could imagine that some of them might be harmful to the plants and feed off of the juices of the plants, and others might just be finding a nice warm home in the soil.
Yeah. Yeah, and he might have a good answer for you on that one. So I'd get a hold of, just go online to the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, and you can, if you've got a photo or not, if you don't have a photo, but you can collect some of them and put them in an envelope, he'll take a look at them and let you know. So good luck. That's a hard one, Tova.
Yeah, it's always a little hard to identify something like, a fly or whether it's going to cause a problem. It's not really, it's not one of the big bad, the group of baddie guys that we usually think of.
Yeah. Tova Martin, our guest today, talking with her about your house plants and your holiday plants. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network. Next week at this time, we'll have a special guest. Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus and one of their favorite elves will be with us, so I hope you'll tune in for that on the Ideas Network. Oh, my goodness. Right now, talking with Tova Martin about caring for holiday plants and other houseplants. So join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And, oh, my goodness, Meredith posted a photo.
I saw it. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, yeah. It's a photo of her Norfolk Island pine. She posted it on Facebook. So as you listen, you want to go to our Facebook page, you can see it. She says she's had it for 8 years, bought it at Walmart as an itty-bitty plant, and it shares her holiday festivities. And she's got it decorated a little bit.
She's got her ornaments on it, and it just looks, it's such a good idea.
I love it. Thanks for sending that, Meredith. And if you have a photo to post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show, I hope you'll do it. Oh, goodness. Let's go to Pat in Duluth, Minnesota. Pat, hello.
Hi, happy holidays.
To you as well.
Thank you. I wanted to say I have these three little impatient plants that were grown by a friend, and they've been plagued by aphids since pretty much they've been a few inches tall. Mm. And so I've been cutting them and trying to, you know, I rinse them off. And the aphids came back, and I was thinking, oh, I hate to do that, but I started rinsing a little bit. And so today I was at the co-op, our food co-op, and I was picking up a red pepper, and there was a beautiful ladybug on this red pepper. You can't believe it. I put the ladybug in a little paper bag, tucked it, and told them, this is a ladybug. It's going to come home with me. Just got home now. Put it on that plant. It seemed so happy and content. And I thought I had been missing insects so much with this, you know, with wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have this aphid on my impatient plant. Looking for the little tiny aphids.
Yeah,
so I had to share that because it just, I wish I had internet. I would send a picture right now.
I just see the scene on the checkout counter with this little ladybug going down the conveyor belt.
I know. I didn't want it to fly away. You could tell it was starting to get a little bit upset with me, and it was on my jacket, and I thought, this isn't a good situation. So I put it in a little bag, and we're home safe and sound, and I'm so thrilled. I can't
say. But it's got food, right?
It has food. It's going to help this plant that I could not really help perfectly. So it's the happy holiday story for me and my
There
friend.
You go. And the aphid was even wearing the holiday red.
Yeah, that's
I
right.
mean, not the aphid. The
ladybug.
The ladybug, yeah.
Pat, thanks. That's a day brightener. Thank you for calling. Oh, my goodness. Charlotte in Mount Horeb. Let's go to you next. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi. I am a great lover of houseplants, and I hate to see anything die. I hate it when any of my houseplants dies. And I was just, and every year when I get a poinsettia, of course, it dies, and you folks have already discussed that. So I actually now have a poinsettia. I struck gold, and I have one that's lived for 3 years.
Wow.
And it's still with me, and it still blooms on its own. I don't do anything to make it bloom. So I'm just wondering what I did right after all these years of trying so hard to get them to live and being heartbroken. What did I do right?
Well, they do need a lot of light. So you must have, I mean, when they're not being prepped for their holiday display, they need a lot of light. So you must have a nice sunny window that it's liking.
Okay. It started out in a place that where the windows face south, and about a
That's
year
a
ago,
good start.
I was in a place
yeah.
where the window faces east, unfortunately. So I've resorted to using grow lights.
Oh,
that's your trick.
Not just on the poinsettia, on all my houseplants, because I only have east-facing windows in this apartment.
Well, east is not bad. I mean, one thing you might do and continue to do is rotate the plant.
Okay.
Just keep rotating it, and that way you'll have a more balanced plant. So you've got the bright red bracts, right?
Yes.
Oh,
wonderful.
My God. And how long do they last? I mean, how long does the red last?
You know, I haven't tracked that, so I can't really answer that. It just regularly puts out, you know, a few red leaves now and again.
Yeah,
it's got a nice new
leaves
one,
rather than brown.
A whole blossom right now. So I didn't know.
Well, you're the champion.
After all these years of failing at getting them to live.
Well, I
can't think of anything I did differently.
Well, I think it might be the light, or sometimes it's just putting the plant closer to the window will work, or it might be. Now, what's the temperature in your place?
I don't have a thermostat or thermometer per se that tells me exactly what it is. I'm guessing 68-70. Probably 70.
Yeah, probably not warm, but not too warm, because
right.
that's always a good configuration too. And do you put it out in the summer, or what do you do?
No, I didn't put it out, and I do have a balcony I could have put it out on. Is that recommended for next summer?
That's a good
Would
idea.
Would it like being outside?
Yeah, cut it back and put it out.
Okay, and is cutting it back advisable then as well?
Exactly,
periodically cutting
yeah.
it back some?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Make new growth is always a good idea.
Okay, because I haven't really been doing that except as necessary when a branch starts to die off.
Yeah, I said, that'll make it be a more plump type of thing.
So you,
yeah, it is a little scraggly looking.
Yeah, do you lap it off on the top?
Take some off the top. You can pretty much, if it's looking scraggly now, after it's all finished and the show is over, give it a good, a good walking back.
Okay, I've been afraid to do that because, as I said, I'm so excited that this won't live. I'm afraid to do anything different.
Well, you might be surprised. You might get even better results.
Yeah.
Do you think that they over-fertilize them to make them bloom so much? And I was wondering if that's why they usually don't live. Maybe they're stressed from being over-fertilized or something.
Be under-fertilized, wouldn't they?
Well, that's a member of the family, the tomato family, actually, same sort of family. And not the tomato family, sorry, the Euphorbia family. Yeah, I'm mixing it up. But anyway, they don't like too much fertilizer,
right,
as Larry just pointed out there. They would, sort of just go even more gangly with too much fertilizer.
Yeah, I was just wondering if maybe that's why it is that they usually die after Christmas, that maybe something was done to them to make them bloom so intensely.
No, they usually die because they fall victim to some, some pestilence or other.
Okay.
Well, now, Charlotte, you're going to have to take a photo, lop it off, and then next year, I want to hear, or the next time Tova's on, I want to hear back about that. And then give us another photo. So then we'll have two or three photos of your plant.
Okay.
We'll have the family album.
The poinsettia. Oh, yeah, because that's great. She's able to have kept it for 3 years. That's
awesome. Yeah, that 3 years is brilliant. And it sounds like she's had bracts or red leaves throughout the whole time each year. So she's doing pretty well. But interestingly, Larry, did you hear her say that she didn't give it the, the dark?
Right, she just leaves it out.
Yeah.
And I wonder what variety.
Maybe she goes to bed early.
No, I don't.
You don't. Do you know what variety of, or what type of poinsettia you have?
No, I don't think I kept
that information. But it's red.
It is red.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
The red ones are the most vigorous, I believe.
There we go. Well, take those photos and let us know, will you, Charlotte?
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Karen in Oshkosh, what's on your mind today?
Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have some succulent plants that were in pots outside for the summer, and I brought them in the house.
Okay.
I understand that without enough sun, they're going to get leggy, which they seem to be doing.
Okay.
I have a friend who does succulents, and she said she winters hers in her garage. She just puts them in the garage. So I wondered if that's really a viable option.
Not if your garage is going to freeze.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you had an attached garage that didn't freeze, it might be.
Okay.
An option.
I did put them in my basement, but it gets a little light down there, and it's quite warm. So then they were not doing well. So I brought them up. Can these be cut back, or will they not grow from the root again?
You can't put up a picture for us because there's so many different types of succulents, and some of them, like the echeverias and the aeoniums, a few of the varieties, you can just, wop off the top and stick it down in the soil again, and it just roots like It's just fine. And if you don't know the variety or can't take a picture, and don't really, you know, sort of like a last-ditch effort, you could, you know, just give it a try. But what a lot of people do is they just, you know, take a cutting off the top, just remove those lower leaves, stick it in the soil, and, you know, down the soil again. And it's amazing how it just roots itself in again.
I have seen, yes, I have seen that done on the internet. And I did start some by roots outside doing that. And will I have enough sun in my, it's a south, I do have a south-facing window.
South is ideal.
Okay, and so new ones will start without that hot summer sun. They'll be good, huh?
If you could put it closer to the panes of glass, again, rotate it if possible. But south is as good as it's going to get, really, unless the south has got an overhang or maybe an evergreen in front of it blocking the light. But if not, if it's just facing south with good incoming light, that's going to make that little succulent pretty happy.
Okay, great. And then I have a second question about these succulents. I have seen on the internet where they've been watered with colored water, and the plant will take that color on.
I wonder what kind of dye they use.
Have you ever heard of that, Larry?
No,
I haven't.
They're absolutely stunning. They're red and pink and blue and
really.
I have never
heard of this one. This is. I'm gonna be Googling that one.
Yeah,
okay.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Well, I think I'm just going to try a little food coloring water on one of them.
Just see what happens.
See what happens. Yeah.
Why not, Karen?
The only thing, Karen, don't, don't like put it in a glass of water or anything because it will rot. It is a succulent, so don't overwater it. But it's definitely worth a try.
Okay.
Well, if I get some color, I'll send you a picture of that.
I want to see that.
You might have some blue soil or something, too.
There you go. Karen, thank you so much for calling. Please do send a photo on our Facebook page because I would love to see the results of that.
Yes.
Shirley in Nakusa, we turn to you next. Hi, Shirley.
Hi. Yeah, I'm wondering, I got a lot of African violets here, and I want to start some new ones, and I don't know exactly when I should start these, so that I want them to be blooming, because I got some friends that want some in by May.
By when?
By May.
By May, okay. Well, you know, African violets, you can start with just a leaf.
Yeah.
And it takes a little bit longer in the this time of year to root things. If I were you, I would get started now.
Okay.
Hang up the phone and do it.
While you're listening.
Yeah. So do you do like three leaves so that you got is three a good number for the pot I'm going to, after they're rooted?
Well, don't give it too large of a pot because African violets really like what I call tight shoes. So don't give it too large of a pot, especially when you're starting fresh.
So should I just start with one, two, three, or what?
Well, you can put a three together in a little rosette and see, you know, that might get a few plants started. Each one will make a little rosette of leaves around it, you know, out of the little center there, out of the place where the leaf meets the stem, meets the soil. Just tuck it in there.
Okay. Well, that leaf that I used to start it with, does that one just go die off or what?
It could be. Sometimes it takes a little while to die off, and you'll get it as part of the configuration. It's not gonna rot and hurt it for quite a while. So don't worry about that.
Okay. All right. I'll do that through the hang up.
All right. Thanks, Shirley. Appreciate the call. Well, make sure. Do it next to the radio. while you're listening, okay? You can join in, too, by the way. We have some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Have a question about your house plant or about purchasing one? I hope you'll join in. Thomas and Oconomowoc up next. Thomas, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
What can we do for you?
Oh, I was just wondering, is there any tips or tricks or trade secrets to keeping felines away from certain plants?
Oh.
Yeah.
I have two cats.
This one's like poinsettias, and
yeah.
You know, certain ones are toxic to them. So.
I have two cats, Coco and Tiger, and Coco loves to get into the plants. Which
oh, really?
I'd have a lot more plants if it wasn't for Coco.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, on the bigger plants, like I've got Limey now. My lime tree is is inside and on a pedestal on a south window. And, you know, it's a pretty big pot. And, the first time I brought it in, it was about a half hour later, and Coco was already up in the plant. So
oh.
What I do with that, those larger ones, is I put tinfoil. Kind of crunkle up tinfoil and put it on the soil surface. And most cats don't like tinfoil, so he won't go up in it.
You know what I do, Larry? I put my some Christmas ornaments in the in the soil line there.
Oh, that's not a nice idea,
it's
too.
It's like tinfoil, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The round ones, the bulb
yeah,
type?
Yeah. I mean, I don't do anything expensive that could be swatted onto the floor but and crashed. But I, just buy some inexpensive ornaments and do top dressing.
And what are there other things that can be done? I honestly don't know.
How about river stone? Just putting some stones on the top. But Thomas might also have a problem with them, if they nibble on the leaves. Is that the problem, Thomas?
Yeah, it's pretty much anything that they can get in their mouth they want to chew on, especially living plants.
Yeah.
I put those kind of plants on a very slender, tall plant stand where there's nothing, there's no landing pad for the cat. I find that works out pretty well.
Yeah, the landing area is very critical. And the other thing I'll do is I'll purchase some, the grass for cats.
Oh.
And I set one of those out here and there, and the cats eat on that.
Diversion tactics.
That, and actually, they're fairly inexpensive, and they'll last quite a long time. And they don't tend to bother the other plants so much when they've got right handy there their own little patch of grass that they can chew on.
Yeah, that's true. That works really, really well, I find, giving the cat a plant of its own so he can be a farmer.
And that does help, although then occasionally you find little places along in the floor where they've upchucked a little of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, there's that, too. There's that, too. But, Thomas, I tried a little experiment when I Einstein is my kitty, and I got him as a kitten from a shelter, and I had to train him, so I tried a few things. And the first thing I tried was spraying that peppermint spray that you can buy that's supposed to be a cat repellent.
Yeah.
Well, it ate all these holes in my orchid leaves.
Yeah, you got to be careful about
that. Yeah, yeah. And then not only that, but it didn't repel the cat at all. If anything, he was curious about that smell.
Yeah.
So then I tried, the squirt gun idea.
Yeah.
Well, Maine Coon cats, which is what I've got, just love water. So that didn't work. But, Thomas, what really works? The ear-piercing screams. When I scream bloody murder, the cat, he just runs away.
Yeah. but me, you yeah. know, I'm gone all day. And
yeah, that's true.
There's... They do it whatever they want all day long. Well, I'm not there.
They get in
any trouble they can get in, they get in.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe somebody else, stay listening, Thomas, man. Maybe somebody else has an idea that we haven't given you already for keeping the cats away from the houseplants. The best really is to, for the large ones, you know, you could use Christmas ornaments or tinfoil or... Keep them on, as Tova says, keep them on a sort of a the stand that they just can't get up on. Yeah.
Larry, I was just thinking, when we said Christmas tree ornaments, I didn't mean to hang them because they will swat at them.
Yes.
That has happened a lot. I meant to put them on the soil because I'm just looking at this picture that Meredith put up, and I'm thinking, wow, wouldn't Einstein love to swat at those?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, our... The ornaments are mutilated on the bottom half of our Christmas tree, to be perfectly honest. I never put the good ones on the bottom part of the tree. I put ones that, okay, well, if they chew on that one, I guess that's okay.
Yeah.
There we go. Thanks, Thomas. Katie in Sun Prairie, on to you now. Let's see here. I can get to her. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have been growing and cultivating jade plants for quite some time, and they grow extremely well, the top part. The problem that I always have is that I can't get them to root very well, so they become extremely top-heavy. Mm. Is this a common problem with jades, or is this a problem with what I'm doing, and how can I get them to take root?
Katie, I'm thinking that maybe when you're trying to root them, you're watering it to the soil too much because they really prefer to sort of dry out when you're have you tried to root them and have they like rotted or something like that?
No, they just don't create much of a root system. It's just a very weak, shallow system.
Hmm.
And I do let them dry out significantly in between waterings. I knew that they don't like to be wet. So
what type of soil are you rooting them in?
You know, I don't specifically know a lot. It seems very organic.
Okay. I'm just thinking that, you know, if the soil also is kind of more little, you know, something that retains water too much, that the roots might not be wanting to go down. I can't say that jade plants have, you know, a really vigorous root system. You know, they can survive on scant roots.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They really can. So if you get any roots at all, you're mm-hmm. probably in like Flynn on that. So
yeah, they definitely survive, and they're vigorous. But maybe I'm just impatient. They're still fairly young. It's just that I have to keep them propped up against walls or something to make sure that they don't topple over at all times.
I see. Maybe a little more light for the big plant, the mama plant.
Mm-hmm.
That might keep it from stretching and getting, you know, stretchy and gangly.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you, Katie.
And Jill in Rice Lake. Hi, thank you. For calling.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you so much for this program. I inherited my mother's African violets in 1995, and they have bloomed beautifully for all these years, and they're healthy and they're wonderful. And I haven't had flowers for about, I would say, since Easter. And I don't know what's the matter with them, but they do have the centers, the very center of the crown for about a half an inch across. The leaves are healthy, but there's this crunchy, dried up, you know, kind of just like a dead plant in the middle of each one. And I don't know what attacked them. I see no bugs.
Could it be that you watered a little too heavily on and to make the center rot a little bit?
Do you mean watering? I always water from below.
Okay, good.
Like I'm supposed to, and I don't know.
And you don't overwater. You know, you're not overwatering.
Well,
you're not giving them.
What does that mean?
Well, it's variable, but I find that African violets like a tight. To be
yes.
tightly, you know, not a large container, very, very
like
tight
they're growing over each other.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, and you know they do, and then I split them. Like when you get a split stem,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I mean. Then you've got a, I don't like that look. They're back to back squished in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I then.
Give them their own container.
Right. But I always start out small. Anyway, I don't know what happened to them, and I lost them.
Well, don't give up, Jill, because mine started blooming real late this year. I have a blue one and a maroon one, and they're just beginning to bloom now.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't start in their usual fall this year.
Okay. I wonder why.
It has to do with something that's totally beyond our control, and that's the weather.
Really? The weather this fall would bother them.
It might be that they didn't, it could have been warmer than normal, or it could have just been that they didn't have, that it was maybe brighter or, it's just, all these things are totally beyond our control, but they do affect the plants.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah.
Just hang in there.
Just hang in there. Thank you, Jill, for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, my goodness. Tova Martin, our guest today, as we talk with her about caring for your houseplants and your holiday plants. She is the author of many books, and her latest two, The Indestructible Houseplant and The Unexpected Houseplant. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Talking houseplants today with Tova Martin. Let's go to Jason in Nina next. Jason, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I have a couple houseplants that are unexpected. In fact, you might not even expect these. My first question is about spinach plants.
Oh, my.
Yeah, we were really blessed with a great growing season this year outside. And so I had kept them going so long, I couldn't bear to let them die. So I brought them in the house, and along with some chard and some kale and stuff like that. And that's all doing really well, but all my spinach plants are dying, and I... can't figure out why. Any idea?
Well, actually, it's so funny because I'm trying the same experiment this year, but I started buying some from seed and didn't actually dig them. So you dug these, right?
Yeah, and it's the same, obviously the same soil from outside.
Right.
That I brought in the house, and everything but all my spinach plants, I probably have, I don't know, six or seven of them, and none of them are doing well, but everything else is doing really well.
Now, what are they, what are the symptoms? Are they kind of getting yellow leaves and then they're wilting?
Yeah, they're real wilty.
You know, you might try pulling them a little away from the sun.
Okay.
They might be just, getting too hot. In your, you know how spinach really prefers cooler temperatures?
Sure. Yeah.
That whole configuration you just mentioned, everything would do well, I'm thinking, except spinach doesn't really, do well when it gets to be like verging on 80 outdoors. It only likes the spring weather.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Might be a little too warm in your house, or you could put it a little closer to a cool window or something like that. Another option. Or do you
okay.
have a room that is maybe a room that's a heated porch but not only barely heated?
Oh, sure. I have like a back mudroom I could put them in.
Oh, that might be perfect.
Yeah, that could be perfect.
I'm doing some pak choy, and it's doing great indoors. It's I think I'm going to be able to eat it pretty soon.
What do you think about my other question is spinach plants.
Mm-hmm.
Not spinach, strawberry plants. They gave me flowers in the basement.
No way, really?
Yeah.
Why?
I bought the plugs online, and I had them shipped here, and so I got flowers on them, but now, like, I think all the flowers are gone, but I didn't get any berries, so... Was I supposed to fertilize them or something, or...?
It would probably be more of a light thing, don't you think?
Yeah.
Larry, wouldn't you think it would be
I would think that. It's hard to get them indoors, to get them...
More
to,
light, you think?
Yeah.
It's worth a try. I mean, if the plants look vigorous, it's so funny you're mentioning it, because I just brought a strawberry in myself, and I left it out as long as I could, and then I brought it in, but it's not even making flowers. So you're 10 steps ahead of me.
Well, I missed one thing, yeah.
Wish we had more help for you there, Jason, but thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Yep, thanks a lot.
Let's. Helen has a photo up on Facebook, Helen from Manitowoc. So let's go to Helen, and I'm looking right now at your photo. Helen, describe what you've got here.
Well, I think it's an oxalis, that's what it's called. The leaves fold up at night, and then during the day it's
an oxalis, for sure.
Yeah, and it gets flowers on it, and I've had it for years, and it's always been nice and healthy. It's a happy little plant.
Mm-hmm.
But recently it got some spots on it, and I thought it was just damaged by who knows what, water, or my husband spilled his coffee or something. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But now it looks like mold.
You know, it's hard to tell whether that is powdery mildew or not. It doesn't, you know, I know the problem with oxalis, that they can get that sort of thing. But there's really good news, Helen.
Yeah.
That is that this particular oxalis comes from a little corm below the soil. So you can actually remove the leaves and the stems, and it will pop up again.
Oh, like cut it down to the ground kind of
thing?
Yeah,
yeah. They come from, this particular one is a bulbous type.
Sure.
And,
okay.
And so, you know, if it is a problem like that, if it's powdery mildew, it might be a situation that, you know, happened temporarily. You said you had good luck.
Sure.
Powdery mildew and leaf spot diseases like this are usually due to a weather or climate situation where you might not have enough air circulation, or it might be a very, damp, dark situation that you've had.
Mm, haven't had much of that. Between the air conditioner and we've got humid. I'm in Wisconsin, right on Lake Michigan, so not too much. It could be dry. Maybe that would cause it more than anything, but because, you know, being in the house and all. But
okay. It's worth a try to just cut it back and let it. Because this is a little unsightly, and you have all new growth.
It's and the leaves are starting to curl too, so it doesn't look nice anymore. And I was just thinking, should I toss it out or?
I'd off.
Yeah, good idea. Thank you so much. I enjoy your program, Larry. We listen all the time.
Oh, thanks, Helen. Appreciate it.
Take
care. And let's go to Ann and Nina next, or Nasita, excuse me. Hi, Ann.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you so very much for this program and all of the WPR programs. They're great.
Thank you.
I believe I may have a solution for the gentleman with cats. I have multiple cats and multiple plants, and after many years of losing several, because my cats thought that it was a great potty box. I finally figured it out. I have about a 5-foot-tall Norfolk pine, which I decorate for Christmas. But to keep my cats out of the pot, I went to my local farm store and purchased some wire mesh.
Oh, good idea.
So I literally made a fence and just put it inside the pot, and it's the size, the diameter of the pot, goes all the way around the trunk of the plant.
Yeah.
And it's about 18 inches, maybe 20 inches tall.
Okay.
And the cat will not go up and over that. And then I put a Christmas tree skirt around it to hide the fencing.
Mm-hmm.
So that works for my Norfolk pine. Any plant that I can hang, all of my spider plants, anything with a vine, I hang them from the ceiling. I put them in plant hangers and hang them up high so the cats can't reach those. And thirdly, and I don't know if I can name a brand name product,
sure,
but I recently found this product made by PetSafe. It is called Scat, S-S-S-Cat. And it has a motion sensor top, and it has an aerosol can of vapor spray.
Wow.
Well, it wouldn't work for your cat, Tova, because your cat likes the vapor spray, but cats don't. So, you know what? That's not a bad solution, although probably a little more expensive solution, but not a bad solution anyway. Tova Martin is our guest today, the author of many gardening books, horticulture industry veteran, and her latest books, The Indestructible Houseplant and The Unexpected Houseplant, for Garden Talk. Well, Friday means Garden Talk, and today we're turning our attention to the plants that you have inside for the holidays. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. And our guest to answer your questions, Tova Martin, a perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener accredited as an organic land care professional. She does a wonderful job, and it's always great to have her stop by. And if you have a plant question, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And just to let you know, coming up at 1 o'clock today, we'll have an NPR special coverage of President Obama's final press conference of the year. He's expected to field questions about how the U.S. will take action against Russia for its suspected involvement in the U.S. election process, talk about the suspension of evacuations in Aleppo, and tensions with China in the South China Sea. That's NPR special coverage of President Obama's press conference today at 1 on the Ideas Network. So looking forward to that as well. And Tova, we have many callers online.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to the phones. Patty and Eden up next. Patty, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to add something to the lady that asked about the African violet issue. I've been growing them for many, many years, and I noticed that they do like a lot more sun than people want to give them.
Mm-hmm.
Mine prefer the east window, and in the summer, the south window is a little too hot, but in the winter it would be perfect. And fertilizing always brings flowers on, but not so much this time of year. And the water problem is probably what happened with her crusting of the plant, because soft water is a bad thing to give to your violets or any other plant. And I thought maybe that's probably what happened, because I tried soft water for a short time when they installed it, and it almost killed all my violets.
Wow. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Thank you, Patty.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Patty, for calling. Appreciate that. Some good advice there. Don in Eau Claire has some questions for us. Don, hello to you.
That's good to know.
Don, are you there?
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Right there. I think he's got. Let's go to John in Mequon next. John, hello.
Hello. Thank you, Larry, for taking my call. My question is regarding jades and ponytail plants. I'm new to ponytail plants. Instructions say water every 6 months, but I think that's too light. But jades, I've been growing those for years, decades actually, and I've got them maybe 3 feet tall. And every winter, I'll put some jades in the south window, the east window, the west window, and maybe water them every 4 to 6 weeks. And many of them just get wrinkly leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they need
a little more water.
A little more water.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what would you say to me as far as a watering schedule?
How often
should I water them and the ponytail plant?
Well, it's hard to give an actual schedule when, because the light is different, different weather patterns, et cetera. But
sure.
Basically, I find that ponytails are very thirsty plants. So
right.
I find that mine need water about every, at least twice a week.
They
drink a lot. It depends upon what size pot, all kinds of, different variables on that. But they seem to be doing quite well with water twice a week. Mine are. On the jade, I think that shriveling of the leaves is body language that's saying, water me.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not enough. And you're not giving it enough water.
Very good.
All right. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kathy in St. Francis, we're on to you now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I have a couple questions about, we have two lemon trees that we've had for about 3 years. They live in a east-facing window, and every winter they flower for us, but we can never get them to give us lemons.
Hmm. Just wondering, did you grow them from seed? Are they plants you bought?
They were gifts, yeah. They were plants that we bought, so not
okay.
from seed.
Okay.
They're Meyer lemons.
They're Meyer lemons.
Mm-hmm. Well, they should work. That should.
Yeah, they should be fine. Very close to Larry's limey.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they light is an important factor, and they should be rotated so you're getting as much light as you can. You don't happen to have a south facing window, do you?
Not for the size of the trees. They're pretty big. They're in almost, I would say, 5 gallon.
Wow. They're big.
Pot.
Yeah.
They're just not giving us what we.
Do really they flower?
Want. They do flower, and they smell great.
Do you see any little tiny fruit form, like a little green thing in the center of the flower? A little green, like, it looks almost looks like a one of those. A little pinheads that,
I think we've seen those. I mean, it hasn't started yet this year. I can start to see the buds coming, so I know it's about to happen. But I'm sure we've had a couple little green things like that,
mm-hmm.
but nothing that has really come to fruition.
Yeah, so they, in other words, they drop off. Now,
right.
Watering, are you... citrus actually like a lot of water.
So we do about a pint of water a week for each of them.
Okay. That sounds pretty good. I mean, best thing you should probably do is, just check the soil and see if it's dry. Mine usually, of all my plants, I find the citrus of some of the thirstiest. Have you found that, Larry?
Yeah, they are. And, sometimes I'll take a piece of paper or something and make a kind of a fan. And when they're flowering, I want to move the pollen from one flower to another. And you can do it. Sometimes you can do it with wind and sometimes you can do it with Q-tips.
Yeah, or you can just
take
a little paintbrush
one year.
Little paintbrush and play birds and bees there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's worth a try. And then the water.
Okay.
Give it a shot. Thank you so much for calling, because Meyer lemons they're really good indoors. If you've got a south-facing window in particular, I've got like 4 big south-facing windows. So
wow, you are lucky.
Yeah, I'm lucky that way.
I find they need fertilizer. I know you give them kind of constant fertilizer.
I give them, that's the other thing I do every time I water. I've got some fish oil that I put in the water,
And so they get watered with fish oil every single time.
Yeah, they are. Of all the plants, they're also the hungriest.
Yeah.
Thirstiest and hungriest.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. Appreciate the call. Kay and Beaver Dam, it's your turn. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I'm calling to say that my solution to keeping my cat out of my plants is pine cones.
Oh, what a good idea. Oh.
I have a number of a variety of pine trees in my yard, and I find not the long, skinny ones that are kind of like a cigar, but the short, squatty ones. I bring them in the house in the fall so they open up nicely and really layer them over the pot, and the cat, because of that texture, the cat doesn't want to step in there, and I've got it thick enough that he doesn't want to mess with it at all. So,
and it looks, I bet you it looks great.
Yeah, it looks kind of festive.
Yeah, great idea.
What a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a place you can go and collect pine cones, it works great, and it doesn't give off any odor. I think one year I may have brought in a few bugs, but we got rid of those too.
Okay.
No big problem.
Thank you, Kay. I like that idea. Cause it's
a wonderful idea.
Certainly looks a lot better than my tinfoil. I'm sure of that. Chris and Shamrock, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. I have a very simple spring and fall question.
Okay.
I guess this would be now its second summer that they've gone through. I planted kind of every other spot in a chunk connected to our regular garden, which I don't till, of course, the strawberries and asparagus. Everything else I till annually. This now, we're in the fall. This year in the spring, the asparagus will be, I grew it from crowns, so it'll actually have some, it looks great, but they're little spindly, tall, skinny things. This year coming up, they say the third sprouting is when you actually get some usable vegetables.
Yeah.
I just have a, in my strawberry plants, made strawberries, we bought them from little bitty plants, you know, grown outdoors, and put them in the ground, and they made strawberries the first year. This last year, they made, you know, a few. I'm just wondering if there's anything I should do aside from keeping weeds, grass, whatever, from growing up around them, because I'm sure they're going to kind of spread out. But I remember my grandparents' garden years and years and years ago, you know, you could almost always walk out there in the spring and find asparagus and later in the summer and find strawberries. And I tried to duplicate that. I just want to make sure that I'm not, you know, missing any tips or doing anything wrong. And then can I, after all the plants have turned brown and gone down, can I burn that area? Because we burn the garden every year to get rid of the seeds.
Larry, do you have any thoughts on that? Whether he should, you definitely, you know, it sounds like you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Hard to tell. I know asparagus is a very, very hungry plant. So they suggest often that you top dress with compost every spring.
Yeah, I don't know what else, you do, you know, the strawberry beds over time, they need to be rejuvenated. But you're a long ways away from that. You're in the first year. So I think you're doing fine. And in terms of burning off the, once everything is dead, I don't see there'd be a problem there. It's often.
Yeah, can I hurt the roots of the plant? I just don't want to mess up what I've got 3 years into now.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if I'd do that with the strawberries. I don't think
I wouldn't burn.
I wouldn't. I probably wouldn't do it myself.
Okay,
I think you're
going
to be fine with without.
Okay. Yeah, we added. I tilled an extra 4 feet wide chunk to our existing garden. That, of course, all the years in the past, when the springtime comes and snow comes off and it starts to dry out, we always just burned it to get rid of anything that wanted to plant itself, which there wasn't anything there to come back, so I wasn't worried. But I'll just be careful not to burn that area then.
I wouldn't. Thanks for calling, Chris. Appreciate it.
But you should probably clean off, you know.
Oh, yes.
Especially the asparagus. You know, it's kind of a when they start to turn yellow, just cut them way back.
Yep, there we go. Don in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Don. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I missed the first half hour of your program. Maybe you covered amaryllis plants. But what I wanted to know, if you could repeat, and that is when the amaryllis plant has finished its flowering, when do I cut back the flower stem, and how far do I cut it back at that point?
We didn't cover amaryllis, Don, so thank you for introducing that to us on the topic. Wait till the flower can finishes, you know, it's blooming, and sometimes that can take quite a while, and it's wonderful, and you don't want to curtail that, but then just, cut that stalk down again, but don't, continue to keep the plant close to the light and all that. I find that even maybe a month later, sometimes another flower stalk juts up, and I get a whole nother wave of those wonderful flowers.
Yeah. They're a great holiday gift, too.
Aren't they wonderful?
Yeah.
That's what my family got.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Don.
Ryan in Michicott, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Ryan.
Hello. I have a question about, I have a mandarin orange that I bought a couple years ago, and it shot a bunch of shoots off the bottom of the stem with thorns and everything, and it dropped its fruit set and everything. I don't know. I cut them off. I thought it was sucking from the plant. Is that normal?
It's what is an orange?
It's a mandarin orange, yeah.
Yeah, and it made growth from the bottom?
Sure.
Is that what
you... Yeah, it came out of the node, and it shot like suckers out of it, it looked like.
Does it sound like it's maybe was grafted and you think it might be shooting up below the graft?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should probably remove that. Is there any growth above the graft?
Yeah, I had oranges on it once, and then it flowered last winter-ish, and then it dropped the fruit and flowers and shot those shoots out more.
Now, I'm not sure what they use for the rootstock. Do you know, Larry, what they usually use?
I do not know.
I don't either. But just to be safe and make sure that you, have what you want, really, and that the below the graft isn't stealing all the energy from your beautiful mandarin oranges, I would cut that. I would cut that off. Wouldn't you, Larry?
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Still some time. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Give a call. We have bitterly cold weather in Wisconsin right now, Tova, and getting those plants from the store to your destination.
What a good point, Larry.
What do you do?
Fast.
Yeah.
you definitely have to... pack, put them in. I find that plastic doesn't work quite as well as those paper wrappers that they put on them. But you really, and don't forget to get your car warmed up before you, say you're taking that poinsettia or whatever over to, grandma's house or something. Warm your car up first. It's so important before you do that mad dash. I've found that even plants that like rosemary, rosemary can take a little bit of a chill, but boy, that sudden nip, it doesn't like.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah, no, it's not a good experience for the plant at all.
No, they don't. And then some of the more tropical ones, like the poinsettias. Now, that's a very, very tender plant, and that's not going to like that.
And let's turn to Hedda in Mercer. Hi, Hedda. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. So my question is about an avocado pit. I have grown avocado trees out of my pits in the past.
Yep.
And now I have had this pit in water for, I'd say, at least 6 months.
Oh.
And
wow.
I know they're slow, but now this is the problem.
That's a little slower than normal.
I can't. This is probably my problem. I can't tell which end is up and which end is down.
Oh.
And I've turned them both ways. So I'll have it one way, one
well,
way.
Usually the little...
Turn around the other way. And there's a little bit of a split starting, but I can't... I'm not sure if I'm holding it the right way.
The split, you've got a split starting.
Yeah, kind of on the side, though, so that doesn't give me much of a clue.
Well, Hadi, I haven't done that in a long, in many years. How do you tell one end from the other, Tova?
Well, boy, that's a good question. I'm going to have to go look at an avocado pit right now. I think it's usually the pointed.
The most pointed one.
Up, but I, you know, whether... She should give up at this point is what I'm wondering, you know?
Yeah, and when you get the avocado, if you look at it when you get it, you can tell the stem end.
Yeah, because you can, it's laid that way in the fruit. So next avocado you eat, take a look.
You say start over after my 6 months waiting period.
Well, you don't have to start over.
I give it another month.
Oh, yeah. I will. But I just wondered maybe you guys knew which end might work better.
Well, I'm thinking the pointed end will work better.
Pointed end what? Up or down?
Up.
Pointed end up. Okay, the other end is very flat,
that's the usual.
And I'm thinking, are the roots going to come out of this flat end?
Well, how much water?
To the brim. I keep the glass full. It's sitting on its toothpicks, you know, suspended.
it's above the glass, the water, and it's just above. It's like it's just kind of grazing right above the water, right?
Yeah, I keep.
You don't
the
have
glass
it. You don't have it submerged.
No, just half of it is submerged. You know, it's.
Oh.
I'm thinking to move it up a little bit. I know my. You know what you might try? Have you ever seen, like, a hyacinth forcer?
Yes.
I bet you an avocado pit would fit in a hyacinth forcer.
Okay.
What do you think, Larry?
Yeah, that might work. Why not give that a try? Although I'd try it on a new...
Yeah. But that would be the same idea that you would, it would just be, like, just right above the water surface. Maybe just the bottom, just... Like, don't you think, Larry?
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. I'd give that a try, Hedda, and let us know. Thank you so much for calling. And Tova, we're out of time. Boy, it flew by.
Oh, my goodness, it flies.
It flies. Thank you so much. I hope you'll be with us again.
Well, I usually stay on your Facebook page so people can post questions and pictures.
Oh, wonderful. So Tova's on the page, so if you want to post something on our Facebook page, please go ahead and do it. Tova Martin, the new title, The Holiday Plant Coach. Thanks, Tova.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Tova Martin, her books, The Indestructible Houseplant and The Unexpected Houseplant, and, of course, we have links, and she'll stay with us for a while. So if you have a question or just want to visit with her for a minute, why, please feel free to go to The Larry Mealer Show. That's the title of our page. And thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.